Hello and welcome to Project Masterpiece. I'm your host, Gianna Choi, and in each episode, I will be interviewing a completely unique guest. Through a variety of interviews, from students to community leaders to authors, we will explore the idea that no matter the differences, every single person is a beautifully crafted masterpiece. So make sure to stay tuned for more. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 1 of Project Masterpiece. Today I am joined with a very special guest. In light of this quarantine, I thought it would only be appropriate to interview someone who I am stuck at home with. Starter of a local nonprofit organization and a rising junior at Cornell University, please welcome Grace Choi.
Hi. Hi everyone, thank you for having me on your first ever episode. I'm so excited and a little nervous,
very nervous. Thank you for joining us on this wonderful show. Let's get right into it. So I want to ask, what is the most important thing that you have learned from this quarantine?
Most important thing. I think it would have to be two different things. First, it's that I've come to see and experience the necessity and beauty of rest, and I've learned that we're not really in control of our lives. I think with the rest part, I've come to realize that rest is so, so important, and physical rest or lack thereof has detrimental effects that leak over to our mental, spiritual, or emotional well-being. And I think with quarantine, many of us have been forced to pause, take a step back, maybe even step away from our technology and really take in the world around us. Maybe we've had to have conversations with family and friends we may not have talked to in a while. And I think that despite all the tragedies happening in the world right now, there is so much beauty in rest and beauty in communication and really putting our phones down to talk with people. And I think, secondly, I've had to learn firsthand, and I'm sure a lot of us also have, that we're really not in control of our lives. I personally had so many plans for the summer. I was supposed to be down in LA for this upcoming fall semester. I was supposed to be in Dublin, Ireland, studying abroad. But so much of that has changed. And as someone who is like a meticulous planner and wants to plan out every aspect of my life, it's been a process of taking things day by day. And it's been so frustrating. But and for me, I think it's all rooted in my faith. But as a Christian, it's been frustrating to know I'm not in control, but such a relief to know that God is. And so, yeah, that's the beauty of rest and the importance of realizing how not in control I am has been really, really nice.
Yes, I agree. Rest is really important. And that's also something I've learned from this quarantine. And I'm also sorry to hear that you couldn't go to Ireland. And that sounds really fun.
That's okay.
But, you know, speaking of some of the things that are happening during quarantine, one of the biggest things is the Black Lives Matter movement. Mm-hmm. I just want to know, what do you think is the best way people can do? I mean, wait, that was grammatically incorrect. What do you think is the best way people can help support the movement right now?
Yeah. First off, let me say, I am by no means qualified to be the authority on this. I'm just going to say what I've sort of come to realize and what I think. So based on everything that's happening, I've been thinking a lot about how Christians can respond to the situation. And it's been a lot of reflecting on my part about within my faith, who God is and how he might want his people or Christians to respond to this. Something that's really stood out to me is that God really cares about justice. And that's been a relief to me as I pray about justice to be done over the brutal murders that are happening and the everyday systemic oppression and racism that exists in our society today. I've been thinking a lot about verses like Proverbs 31, 8 to 9, that tell us Christians to speak up for those who cannot speak up for themselves, for all the rights of those who are destitute, to speak up, judge fairly, and defend the rights of the poor and needy. Yeah, so to me as a Christian, something I've been thinking about a lot, more than anything actually, is that every single person is made in the image of God, and that means that every life is valuable and we should treat it as such. And so here are four conclusions that I've reached. This is just me. First, I found that there is a need to educate ourselves. So yeah, like continual learning. Second, I think a practical way I found to like love the fellow people around me is to sign petitions. Thirdly, I think prayer. And fourth, and this is something I've been thinking about the most probably, but just wondering how we can use our sphere of influence, where we are, what positions we're in, what kind of communities we're in, to use our sphere of influence to continue the fight for racial equality. And I know this went kind of long, so I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. And yeah, I do agree with you about all of those points, and I can see that you've thought a lot about it, so that's really good. So thank you for that, and now we're going to quickly transition into the fact that you started a nonprofit organization called Unoya. So can you tell me a little bit about the story behind it?
Yeah, so Unoya, first off, means beautiful thinking, beautiful mind. The inspiration for the organization actually came from my grandfather, who ran a missional nonprofits. Basically, it was an organization that built schools in Cambodia, provided necessary supplies, also provided for orphans in South Korea. So I grew up seeing this and it was super exciting. I wanted to do the same thing. And so my parents told me that when I was about 7 or 8, I went up to them and I was like, Mom, Dad, I want to create a nonprofit. And they were like, do you even know what that is? And I said confidently, no, but I want to do it anyways. And so that dream happened. My grandfather unfortunately passed away when I was in 6th grade, but I still held on to the dream. And so in 10th grade, I decided to put it into action. And after a conversation with my dad, I decided that Unoya would be an organization that works on two fronts to help teens. So on one front, we're an organization that provides teens opportunities to help their local community or to help other teens in their community. And the other front is to help community members, to help local teens. So we are an organization that operates in local communities. We're not yet international. It's local chapters working in their city or in their county to help people. And so, yeah, so we started as a not-for-profit, sending teens to volunteer at senior homes. And then in early 2017, we officially became a 501c3 nonprofit. And since then, we've been doing our best to help local teens in whatever ways we can. So we've had school supply drives, feedings, clothing drives, book drives, care package drives, much more. We've partnered with schools and teen shelters, teen pregnancy centers, any sort of community-based organization that helps teens. And yeah, that's what we're continuing to do. Last year, we had a focus on education, solely helping teen-related education causes. Yeah, we're still a small organization.
I see. Well, yeah, it sounds like Unoya is doing a lot of good work. So I just want to know, what are some of your future goals for Unoya? What do you foresee for the 2020 to 2021 school year? Not school year. Year.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's really hard because of everything happening with COVID-19. Right now, my biggest goal would be to continue to develop our high school chapters. So currently, we have 3 high school chapters of Unoya. And my goal for this next upcoming year is to really help 2 of our chapters, and actually really all of our chapters, grow even further, to build individual officers to see like how can they use their talents within the organization, within their clubs, to make the impact that they want to make and to help them maximize that to the best of my abilities.
Right. So what advice do you have for people who are wanting to start a nonprofit also to make an impact on their community?
Yeah. First off, I think if people are looking to make an actual organization, like a 501c3, I meant like a legal 501c3 organization, I would say enlist help. I did a lot of the legal paperwork and stuff on my own, and I don't regret it, but it was really, really difficult, especially as a 16-year-old. So get help. Secondly, even if you don't make it an official organization, that is more than okay. If you feel called and you feel like a pull on your heart to help a certain group and you want to do it, go for it. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise or discourage you, as cheesy as that may sound. And third, I think something that's really, really important is to find a group of people who will work alongside you to advance the cause you're passionate about. So for example, if it's like human trafficking or access to like healthcare, get people who will be on your team with the at the organizational level to really help you grow the organization even further.
That was some really great advice, so thank you for that. I just want to mention real quick for the listeners that I will be linking Yunoya's social media, so make sure to go check that out, and also the website will be linked as well. So kind of going off what you're talking about, Grace, I wanted to ask, you talked a little about your experience with filling out legal work, and so do you have any more experience in the law sector, and if so, what kind of experience do you have?
Yeah, so in addition to filing the paperwork, which I don't know if I would categorize as legal experience, but it was paperwork experience for sure. The one experience that I'm super, super proud of is I did a legal internship last summer at the Sacramento Family Justice Center. They're an organization that helps domestic violence survivors and victims, and also works with human trafficking victims. They do a little bit of like, they're an organization that helps like legally, but also with like social services, like emergency housing, safety planning, and all that. And that really opened my eyes to like a whole, I don't want to say industry, like a whole group of, no, a whole part of law that...
Branch, maybe?
Yeah, branch. Yes, I too am tired. That I'm really interested in doing, and that's the broader family law branch area sector. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. You had that internship you're talking about, which, okay, and we're going to get into this later, but with your schooling, have you faced any sort of discrimination in your pursuit of law?
I think so far I am grateful and privileged to say, no, I haven't, but I think, I know for a fact that there's definitely, I don't know if I'd call it discrimination. I think I'd be put at a disadvantage just by nature of like, I'm not going to be able to afford a multi-$1,000 prep course, nor do I want to take one. Also, I think I am put at a little bit of a disadvantage with people who may have like family connections, whether right. The parents like have been born here and have family or friends who can like set them up to like a legal internship or everything. So far though, like with everything happening and even with the things in the future, I'm really not too worried. I think things will be okay.
That's good. So I actually was going to ask you about being a second generation Asian American, which was kind of what I was alluding at, or I cannot words right now. What I was trying to
allude
point
to it.
Or, yeah, I allude said allude at, and yeah. I was like, what? But yes, okay. Allude to before in the question was just in general, I guess, have you had any struggles as a second generation Asian American? Yes, can you list some examples, if any?
Yeah, so many. I think... broadly speaking, yeah, cultural barriers, language barriers, all of the above. If I'm being honest, it's not something I like talking about often. I think that if I'm being like 100% honest with myself, I think by nature of how I was raised, I've kind of been trying to run away from my Korean American identity my whole life. If I'm being honest, I've just seen so much ugliness in the Korean American community, and there's so much beauty in the culture, but also like there's just so many things that I really struggled with and have a hard time coming to terms with. Yeah, I think though that is something that I'm definitely, I don't want to say I'm working on it because that would be a lie. I think it's something I'm still in the middle of processing, like having immigrant parents and really thinking upon like how that affected my schooling life, how that affects my everyday life now. For those of you guys who know me, yeah, like what does my Korean American identity look like in combination with the fact that I'm also a PK, like a pastor's kid in a Korean American church? So what does that mean? And this is all stuff I'm still unpacking. I'm not comfortable talking about it, I think. It's still something I hesitate to reflect upon. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it is really hard to be a Korean American in the US right now. And just, yeah, talking to other people, there are a lot of struggles that they also go through. So it's very valid in my opinion. So, moving on from that, I understand that you are a student at Cornell University.
Oh dear.
And I wanted to ask you, well, first, why do you think that you were admitted to Cornell?
Yeah, God's grace. I don't know. I think people have asked me this, and every time I'm like, Your guess is as best as mine. Like, I don't know. I think maybe my extracurriculars pushed me over the top. I had decent grades and test scores going in. It wasn't like stellar or excellent. And I learn every day when I'm in Ithaca that every single person is smarter than me, pretty much, which it's been so humbling, but also just, it's been so rewarding and amazing to like meet new people, learn about new people. So yeah, my answer is I don't know, but I'm grateful.
Yeah, and regardless of whether or not you know why you got into Cornell, since you're in, can you tell me a little bit about what life as a student in an Ivy League is like?
Yeah, so there's a joke that Cornell is not an actual Ivy League. So assuming that we're assuming that we're going with the conclusion that Cornell is an Ivy League, I can't talk about everyone's experience. I can talk about mine. Cornell is hard. It definitely pushes me out of my comfort zone every semester. It's so cold. It's so difficult getting there. Shout out to all Californians who are making that long and treacherous journey to Ithaca. It's a lot. Yeah, academically, it's challenging. It's really hard. But I love it, not so much for the school. I like the school. I like my major. But I really, really love Cornell for the people and the community it's introduced me to. I really wouldn't trade it for the world. It's just been an amazing experience finding the community that I've found and yeah, just the best people. I'm so grateful and I wouldn't trade it for the world.
That sounds like a very good experience. A very rewarding experience.
Yes, it really has.
Here I am fumbling for words.
That's okay.
Okay, anyways, so based off what you said there, would you say that attending Cornell was probably the most life-changing thing that you've ever been through? Or if not, what was?
No, I don't think college was my most life-changing experience. I don't know that I have, like, one singular life-changing experience. I think my entire life has just been a series of ups and downs and things that are more transformative than others. Yeah, I don't know if I have a singular, yeah, like, momentous occasion that forever changed my life.
Yeah, me too. I don't either, so that's okay. And would you recommend attending Cornell University?
Yes. Wait, can I take this a different direction?
Sure.
Okay. So I think like Cornell or wherever you're going, I think there's a pressure oftentimes on high school students and middle school students and sometimes even elementary students to attend like this brand name school and to go to these like top 15, top 20 universities to like make your parents proud, to make yourself proud and everything. I'm not saying don't do it per se, but what I will say is that when you're applying for colleges and you're thinking about what colleges to apply for, I cannot stress enough, like really look into the colleges you're applying to. Applying to colleges is expensive. It's like $90, $100 per application oftentimes for like more bigger private institutions.
$90 to $100?
$90 to $100. It can be really expensive.
They said $98, $100.
No. But yeah, so like find out as much as you can about the schools you're applying to. Talk to people who are there. Find out about campus life. Find out about transportation, how to get there. Really do your research because you do not want to be in a situation where you get to the school and you're like, oh crap, I hate it here. So do your research. But I honestly believe really college is not a big deal. It's not gonna like, I've talked to so many people about this, like where you go to college, you're gonna be okay.
And I'm glad to hear that, even though I don't sound very glad right now and I sound very monotonous. But yeah, I really am glad to hear that. And it is something that I think a lot of people our age are really, really stressed about. And yeah, it's good to hear it from someone who has experience. Okay, so now the last topic, which, because we need something juicy here, is,
yikes,
can you tell me about your perspective on relationships? And do you have any advice from your personal experience?
Relationships. How juicy. Okay, I will admit, my advice may be juicy to some who hear it, who may be like, what's wrong with her? But here I go. So I believe very strongly that you shouldn't date meaninglessly.
Ooh.
I think that dating should be done intentionally. And I think, I personally believe that dating should be done with the intention of marriage. That being said, I'm not advocating, like, don't go out with someone or don't go on a date with someone unless you are for certain that you are going to get married to that person, because that's
certainly going to happen.
Creepy. But what I am saying is that I believe very strongly in dating with purpose, dating with intention, dating with the end goal of marriage, and not just dating to date. And something I've been learning a lot recently with lots of conversations with very wise people in my life, and the same information I will relay to you now as I relate to many of the other girls I mentor, is, yeah, in addition to like dating with intention, and I guess a lot of this may apply to Christian girls. I'm not saying it's like exclusive to Christian girls, but that's just kind of how I see it, because it's hard to follow these standards. Yeah, so first, and this is the really hot take that my dad's been telling me that I'm like slowly coming to agree with.
A hot take?
It's a hot take.
Heck yeah.
It's to not date until you are ready to get married. And by that, I mean, like, whether you're in the correct financial situation or you're in the correct age, you're in that stage of life, wherever that is, wherever. I'm not going to say, like, what age there is for specific people, because I don't think that exists. But, like, if you're ready and you find someone who's also ready, my second thing is to enlist the counsel of wise people you trust. So that would mean, like a pastor, a friend who knows both of you, your parents, just people who know you or people who know both of you very well, who can speak truth and life and wisdom into this prospective relationship. I think that's so important. So valuable, should be done a heck of a lot more, and to really like take those opinions into consideration and care about what these people who care about you are saying. Don't just ask like this random person, like obviously like be smart about who you ask for opinion. And then if you are Christian, if you are a believer, pray about your decision on who to date. Pray a lot. My dad's been telling me recently to test the person you're prospective person to date against the word of God, against the Bible, and see, like, based on your knowledge of scripture, in terms of, like, character, in terms of, like, faith beliefs, does this person match up? Does this person align with what you believe? Yeah, I think that's really important. Oh, also, one other thing. Mm-hmm. Making sure your values align. And this is like non like religious related. Like if you strongly think that like you prioritize, for example, like time with family over work, but the person you date or marry does not think that, then it's going to lead to major problems. Like talk about those deal breakers. This is not meant to be like super juicy. This is something that my pastor at my college ministry told me, and I've been thinking about a lot. I'm not saying we should all do this, but I think I'm going to do this. So what he did is very early on in his relationship with his now wife, he sat down and told her all of his flaws, all of his major flaws, and was like, these are all the possible deal breakers you could experience in a relationship with me. And yeah, so like his wife's response was like, after deliberating, she's like, okay, I can live with those things. And I think that's like a common wisdom I've heard a lot is, yeah, like once you date and once you, especially when you marry, you see the worst of someone. Like when you're dating and you start to see the terrible sides of people. There's one other thing that I'm forgetting now. So what did I say?
You said something about like how you want to make sure that those terrible things about that person aren't deal breakers, and you want to know what those are before you go any further into the relationship, and basically.
Right, and I don't remember the last thing, but it's really important. Oh, man.
I can talk while you think about it.
You can talk while I think about it.
So I was just thinking, based off what you said, it was really good advice and a good perspective. It's a Christian perspective, which is... But
chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss, yes. And your pastor, what he did by sitting down and kind of just like listing out all his flaws, I just thought that was really interesting. Yeah, we should try that sometime. We should just sit down
and tell each other all our flaws. Yes. All okay, with discretion. Use discretion when you're doing that. Also,
yes.
The thing that my dad has been like, okay, so a lot of this advice is from my father and other people who have basically said the same thing he said. And the one thing that has also resonated with me, as you can see, I have a lot on my mind, is to not expect the person to change, which is, I think a lot of us girls, especially, are in relationships and we're like with, if I'm being very honest, not the best type of guys, or guys are with not the best type of girls. And we like are optimistic and think like, oh, this person may change. But the question really is like, can you love that person even when you don't feel love for them? Can you love them through all that without expecting drastic change? Can you build a life with this person without expecting drastic change for them and really love and accept them for who they are? And that's really hard, super hard.
Not that I've experienced like any romantic love or anything, but yeah, it does sound really hard, and yeah, my heart goes out to all of you people out there.
Oh my goodness.
Me trying to be serious about this.
No,
it's a very serious deal. But yeah, is that everything for the relationships topic that you would like to say?
Yeah, and I think so. I think other than the fact that like, this is, I've already sort of mentioned this, but this is a super, also a hot take. Our modern society, romance movies, romance books, also I'm a fan of rom-coms, but it like all makes love to be like all emotions and nothing less. But throughout this like academic year with all the craziness in COVID-19, in spite of all of that, something that my Bible study leader has been telling me a lot is that like love is not just feeling. Like it'll run out, it'll dry out, and you're not gonna always wake up every day loving your partner or your spouse. But it's really like a commitment to love that person every single day, and it's an action in addition to emotions, but sometimes it's just action. And just that sometimes you're like, that honeymoon phase is not always gonna last, but it's a commitment to love the person and not give up on them, excluding, you know, situations of obvious abuse and mistreatment. That doesn't count. But yeah, it's a commitment, which I think is something our generation, unfortunately, I sound like an old grandma. This is something I have to reconcile with as well. Like something that we don't always see and recognize, that it's a commitment. It's a choice that we make every day to love and to choose the person. Do I sound cheesy?
No, you don't. This is really practical, actually.
Oh, man. I'm glad. I if my words can, like, remotely assist anyone else, I'm so glad.
Yeah, okay. So that's that for the relationships part. Yay. Thank you for the advice. It was quite lovely and very informative. Again, I just can't words. So, is there anything else you would like to say to the listeners before we sign off?
Yes, wear a mask. It's a very practical way to love people right now. And also, as a branch of that, yeah, like, let's all think about ways where we can practically love people, love the people around us. Not just, like, in words, but also in action. Go forth and love one another.
How wholesome. And that is that. So thank you. Thank you to everyone for joining us for episode 1 of Project Masterpiece. Make sure to follow this podcast if you haven't yet. And also stay tuned for episode 2. I don't know when it's going to come out, but hopefully soon. Have a good day and make sure to stay safe.